From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio. Imagine not knowing whether every member of your household would have enough food to eat today. Well, nearly one out of five U.S. households experienced some level of that uncertainty at some point in 2021. Now, as 2022 draws to a close, we're looking at food insecurity here in the Cooley region. Later, we'll learn about the Wafer Food Pantry and how they're helping hungry households this holiday season. But first, we're talking about what resources could be available through government programs like FoodShare. Joining us is Lori Graff. She works as the manager of the Western Region for Economic Assistance, overseeing programs like FoodShare and others. Lori, welcome to Newsmakers.
Thank you for having me.
Certainly. So let's start with just putting it in context. Here in Western Wisconsin, the counties that you serve, how big a problem is food insecurity?
Well, it's always an issue for low-income families. Right now, we have just about 11,000 individuals are receiving food share in La Crosse County. In our consortium, we have the average food share recipients for 2022 is 28,775 individuals that are receiving food share.
And you talked about the consortium, and the brief explanation of it is the way food share is administered across Wisconsin, instead of doing it every single county, which is how it used to be done, now the counties are broken up into groups or consortiums. And so the Western region, which you're the manager of, is how many counties in Western Wisconsin?
We serve eight counties. It's Buffalo, Clark, Jackson, La Crosse, Monroe, Pepin, Trumbull, and Vernon counties. And there's nine other consortia in the state, and then Milwaukee County on its own.
So we talk about food share, and people might have heard that program referenced in the past as like food stamps or SNAP, which is Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which is a federal program that funds food share. But that's basically all the same thing. It's just in Wisconsin, it's called food share, right?
Correct. Yes. SNAP is the federal name. The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program is the federal name. In Wisconsin, it's called Food Share Wisconsin. The program is administered federally by the USDA Food and Nutrition Services.
And I know the qualifying details vary, you know, according to people's income or how many children they have and all of these different things. But in general, what qualifies a person? How does a person know if they're qualified to receive food assistance?
Yeah, so they have to be a U.S. citizen and a resident of Wisconsin, and they have to have income below 200% of the federal poverty level. You know, most people don't know that walking around what the federal poverty level is. And so for a group of individual, it would be $2,266 a month. For a family of three, it's $3,840 a month that they would need to be below.
And so, and you talked about just the thousands of people in our area that qualify for that. Is there an average amount of benefits that each person qualifies for? I tried to look it up online, and the information that I found was really inconsistent. Some of them said it's for every person, it's like $100 a month or something like that. But is there a way to even sort of ballpark that figure?
Well, there's a maximum amount based on your household size. And then the individual amount that you get is dependent on your household size, your income, and your allowable expenses like shelter and utilities.
Okay.
So the maximum amount for an individual is $281 a month. For maximum amount for a family of three is $740 a month.
How often is that number reevaluated? I know it's set by the government program, but how often is that sort of refigured?
So once a year, the income changes with the federal poverty level. The allotment doesn't always change that quickly.
Okay. I just was thinking in terms of the rising cost of food that we've experienced over the last year, which is really quite uncharacteristic. The amount of inflation that we've seen in food costs over the last year must really be affecting people.
Right. One of the provisions under the federal COVID public health emergency allows us to provide more food share than we normally would. So since 2020, the individuals that are receiving food share are actually receiving the maximum amount allowable for their household size. So it's not going down based on their income or their expenses. They're getting that maximum amount. And again, that's tied to the federal public health emergency that continues. So that is helping some.
So COVID has really impacted so many people in so many ways, but it resulted in a lot of people needing to find, people were out of work for a while, and then just inflation making food costs really unbearable for a lot of people. What's that doing for the level of demand for this program in Western Wisconsin right now?
Yeah, I mean, early in 2020, we started seeing our caseloads increase significantly, both for the food share and healthcare programs. In the last year, in 2022, it's slowly going back down as the economy is getting better. But we definitely saw a huge increase in individuals applying and receiving benefits over the from 2020 till 2022.
Now your consortium, the Western Region for Economic Assistance, oversees food share, but you oversee more than food share. What other areas of assistance do you handle?
So in addition to food share, we have the Badger Care Plus healthcare program, the medical assistance program, Wisconsin Shares child care assistance program that can help individuals with their daycare costs. And we also have the Wisconsin Home Energy Assistance program that assists individuals with their heating costs.
How much overlap do you see between the people who need one of these programs versus any of the other programs?
We do see a lot of duplication. A lot of individuals are receiving all of those programs at some time or another. So they definitely are in demand. And we encourage people when they apply that if you think you might be eligible, ask for all the programs that we administer. And we can do that during one single application too.
Okay. My next question was about the paperwork because a lot of people just the processes can be very daunting for people and paperwork gets complicated so if people are interested in seeing if they are eligible for benefits, how do they go about that? Where do they go or what do they have to do?
So even before they apply, if they want to just see if they might be eligible, they can go to the Access website, which is accesswisconsin.gov. And then once they want to apply, there are four ways to apply. So they can apply by phone. We have a toll-free number. For the Western region, it's 1-888-627-0430. Individuals can also apply online at accesswisconsin.gov. They can set up a face-to-face appointment and meet with someone in person at their local agency. Or they can fill out a mail-in paper application. For food share, there is an interview that's required, but customers have the option of doing that by phone or in person.
Okay. And since people are likely driving in the car or maybe reaching for a pen, right when you were saying that phone number, can you repeat it for me again one time?
Sure, it's 1-888-627-0430.
Or accesswisconsin.gov.
Yes.
Aside from the food program, I mean, people are getting it's getting colder. People are depending on that heater to be fully functional, and yet that costs money too. How do people find more information about assistance with the heating program?
So they can call the county, or log on or go Google. Wisconsin Home Energy Assistance Program, and that will give you a connection to your local application source.
And you said call the county. Should they be calling La Crosse County or should they call the county in which they live?
In which they live.
Okay.
So in some counties, the energy assistance program is administered by a third party. In La Crosse County, our economic support section actually administers that program. So they can contact the county directly.
Do you ever encounter people who are surprised by the amount of assistance that they might actually qualify for, or who are, pleasantly surprised, who are in need, but they might not think that there's that much help out there for them that they could have access to?
You know, we definitely do. And We just encourage people to apply. Even if you think you might not be eligible, check it out. If you're struggling, make sure that you're checking out the programs to see if you're eligible.
So when you're looking at all the programs that are available, does one stand out to you that you think people might not be aware of?
Well, I think, everybody knows about food share, but I don't think everybody understands that they could be eligible, or where to contact to find out information, on whether they would be eligible or not. So I think that, that's a program that people often overlook as being something that might be able to be a tremendous amount of help to them. We also have the healthcare program, so BadgerCare Plus and Medicaid, to assist those individuals that aren't covered by health insurance. And so we want to make sure that everybody knows that there is assistance available for healthcare as well. Healthcare has been a really important program for us over the pandemic. They actually put in a provision to make sure that we didn't end people's healthcare during the pandemic, which was really important.
Yeah, that's you talking about people not thinking that they might qualify for food assistance. I remember talking to people at various points in my life, and people talk about these assumptions like, well, I'm single and I don't have any children. There's no way I would qualify for something like that. Or I have a full-time job and there's that would definitely disqualify me from any healthcare benefits or anything. So you're saying people should just apply regardless of their, if things are tight, you should at least apply and see if there's assistance available.
Absolutely. We have a lot of people receiving food share that are working. They're just not making enough money and being able to make ends meet. We have elderly and disabled individuals on our caseload. So, yeah, there's nothing that should exclude you from checking to see if you're eligible.
So one more time, I want to make sure that we go over that website and phone number for people who might have missed it earlier, where they can get the information that they need and see if they qualify for food share or the other programs that you oversee.
Yeah, so the Western Consortium's phone number is 1-888-627-0430. And you can also go online at accesswisconsin.gov. There's also a mobile app that I want to make sure that I put in out here because if you're receiving food share, the best way to check and see what benefits you have left and report changes and things like that is using the Access mobile app, which you can go get in the App Store.
Oh, good. So it's just the Access mobile app.
Yes,
And
you can
people.
find that in the App Store. You can download the app. You just type in Access Mobile Wisconsin and it'll come up and it's a free app that they can download.
Good. Good. Well, Lori Graff is the manager of the Western Region for Economic Assistance. They oversee programs like Food Share and other need-based programs here in Wisconsin. Lori, I want to thank you for your time today. I really appreciate you being with us on Newsmakers.
Thank you so much.
Coming up next on Newsmakers, our focus on food insecurity continues. We'll be talking to Wafer Food Pantry about how they're working this holiday season to make sure that there's food on the table for families in the Cooley region. But first, it's Wisconsin Public Radio's year-end member drive, and we're asking for your support. You can support all the programs that you've come to depend on, including Newsmakers, by going to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and make whatever contribution fits in your budget. The Ideas Network and NPR News and Music have become an important part of your life, and we depend on that support. Member support is the largest source of funding for WPR programs, as you've heard us say time and time again. So support the programs that you enjoy every day by going to WPR.org or calling 888-202-2552. And apropos of today's topic on Newsmakers, support the programs you value and provide for hunger relief in your community. Ask for a food bank thank you gift when you give $10 or $20 a month. And those food banks, the donation will be made to a food bank in your geographical area. So you'll be supporting local efforts when you give $10 or $20 a month and ask for the food bank thank you gift. Be counted in 2022. Take action and give the programs you rely on a strong start to the new year with your gift today. I said 2022. I should have said 2023. The way to do that is to go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Newsmakers continues after this. It's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Wisconsin Bureau. More than 53 million people in the U.S. got help from a food pantry or food bank in 2021. That's more than 15% of the country's population. One organization that is growing to meet the needs of food insecure households in our listening area is Wafer Food Pantry in La Crosse. And joining us to talk about her organization's efforts, their plans for the future, and how you can help is Aaron Waldhart, who's the executive director of Wafer. Aaron, thank you very much for being with us on Newsmakers today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to talk to you. We're going to talk about your wonderful building project that's going on later, little teaser for people. We're going to talk about that later in our conversation and find out how that's coming and when you expect that new facility might be up and running. But first, I just want to get a little history about Wafer. How long has Wafer been serving in the La Crosse area?
The organization was formally incorporated in 1985. It existed before then. It was a joint collaboration between the UWL Lutheran Campus Ministries and the Ron Colley Newman Center. So it was first housed right on the campus at UWL and outgrew that small space, moved to St. Paul's Lutheran Church on West Avenue, and that's how Wafer got its name, West Avenue Food Emergency Resource. So that space grew out of that one too. It was in the basement, so it was kind of set up and tear down every time the pantry was open. So we moved to our current location in 2002.
I know that Wafer is a food pantry. Let's talk about who can get food from Wafer. How does that qualification process work?
Sure. Well, we are a part of the government commodities program. It's the Emergency Food Assistance Program. And so really we follow the rules set up by that program. So our territory is La Crosse County. And we also do extend our services to La Crescent as well, because they are able to get on the bus and come just right to the corner by our building and be able to access food that way. There are some income eligibility guidelines as well. We have those posted on our website for folks that are interested. But what I usually say is just because we have those guidelines that we follow, if people present with, you know, an obvious need, we don't turn people away.
Okay, so if somebody is wondering, if somebody thinks that they need a way to find something for their family to eat, and they're thinking, I don't know, do I make too much money? Do I not make too much money? They should not let that stand in the way. They should come and ask for help and see what you can do.
Correct. Yeah. And there's a lot of information on our website too that is helpful for folks coming the first time.
Okay.
You know, we have frequently asked questions, and sometimes it's just helpful to know the process before you get here.
Yeah, that can be daunting for a lot of people, especially if they've never done it before, because there can be some stigma attached to that, and people who are not familiar with the process might find it easier. What's that website where they can find that information?
WaferLacrosse.org.
WaferLacrosse.org. Now you're the executive director of Wafer. How big an operation is it? How many staff do you have helping?
We have 11 part-time staff, and the bulk of our work is done by volunteers. We ask for about 1,000 hours of service every month.
Oh, wow. So if you think career job type stuff, the average full-time worker works about 2,000 hours a year. So every 2 months, you almost have a year's worth of full-time input and output from the people volunteering in your organization.
Yes.
That's really amazing.
Yeah, our volunteers are wonderful.
How long have you been at Wafer?
I've been here 10 years.
Did you know, I mean, what did you know about the organization before you signed on?
Well, I came from a different pantry. I'm originally from the area, and we had moved out of the area for my husband's job. Then he came back here, and so we relocated back to the area. And so I was familiar with Wafer just because of my previous pantry job.
Okay.
But I did not know that the operations would be so much bigger than what I was accustomed to.
Okay. So you were expecting like a, maybe like the origins of Wafer, kind of a church basement food pantry sort of thing?
No, what I came from was about a quarter of what we do here.
Okay. So it's just a matter of scaling up your expectations a little bit.
Yeah. So it was, you know, I just, you know, we had vehicle, we had equipment, you know, the whole government commodities thing. I was familiar with all of it, but, you know, we serve about four times as many people at Wafer as at my previous pantry, and more staff, I guess. It was an adjustment.
Now I know people expect, you know, you get a lot of food donations, and people are sort of familiar with that, and we'll talk about how they can participate in that. But you mentioned a couple times the government commodities aspect. Does that mean that so that what you do is supported by the government somehow, or like through food that a government resource provides?
Yes. So not all of it. So our food, we basically have three different sources of food coming in. We have government commodities, so basic staples, you know, peanut butter, pasta, cereal, meat, that, you know, basic staples. And then we purchase products. So usually each one is kind of about a third. So a third government commodities, maybe not quite, because they have kind of tapered off since COVID. So probably less than that. We purchase about a third of what goes out, again, basic staples, and then the rest of it comes from retail rescue. So because of our partnership with Channel One, a Feeding America food bank, we're able to go to like Walmart and Sam's, Target, a bunch of different businesses in the area. So we send our trucks out, pick up product that is no longer for retail sale.
Okay. We talked about sort of the expectations being a little bit different, a little bit scaled up from what your previous expectation was. But as far as the services that Wafer offers, or maybe the level of need or whatever, how have you seen that change over the last 10 years that you've been at Wafer?
Well, I think one thing that we have done is really listen to what the needs are for the folks that we serve. So, for instance, I remember early on, you know, the way that the pantry was set up, it was different, and we didn't have the coolers that we have now or the way to display produce. And so there was just like a long table in the middle of the pantry that had boxes of produce on it. And so I would walk through there occasionally, and I stopped and I'm like, oh, wow, you know, there's avocado and onion and peppers and cilantro. Wow, you could make guacamole. And I walked away. And when I came back through, I noticed in the lady who was standing next to me when I said that, she had picked up all of those things. And there was a few other instances, like one lady saying, you know, holding a pineapple. I know this is a pineapple, but I don't know how to get it to the point where I can eat it. And so it was kind of like a light bulb moment for me. Mm-hmm. We're giving people all of this really great food, and even some of the canned goods that they would get, they would maybe not know what to do with. And so, you know, as an organization, we launched our nutrition education program where we bring people in and we teach them how to prepare the foods, how to make meals, how to make them healthier, how to incorporate more produce into your daily consumption. And then we provide tools, because the other thing that we learned is that a lot of people don't have the facilities or the equipment in order to prepare the food that we're giving them. So, you know, even something as basic as a can opener, people don't have those things. And so we provide the tools so that they can take their new skills home and implement them as well. And so I think it's things like that that we've done over the years, which has grown the organization, but also grown it because we want to reach the people that need us. So, you know, our mobile pantry that was created because people in rural communities couldn't get to us, those kinds of things. And so it's really just been listening to what's going on. And the need really hasn't changed. You know, it ebbs and flows a little bit, but the need really hasn't changed.
It's interesting you talk about the mobile pantry, because we often think of, well, there's this resource, why don't you just go take advantage of the resource? But when you're talking about people who are really in poverty, as many of the people you serve are, transportation can be a real stumbling block for them at times.
Well, right. And it's not, you know, it's not just like having a vehicle. It's also having the gas money to put in it to run it. You know, do I spend $10 to put gas in my car, or do I use the $10 for groceries? You know, there's that. And, you know, the other aspect of the mobile pantry is that we do stop at a lot of local high-rise centers. It addresses the needs for seniors that have mobility issues. So mobile pantry is just not solely for reaching rural families or people living in rural areas, but also for people that have mobility issues. It is handicap accessible. So if people want to get on and choose their food, they can be lifted right up into it. So it's been really great to see how that's impacted people who wouldn't maybe otherwise be able to use our services.
Well, it's the time of year when a lot of people are having food drives. I know a lot of people have them in the lead up to Thanksgiving. I saw a post from Rotary Lights the other day that they're collecting food donations for Wafer and you know, churches and civic groups and everybody at this time of year are trying to do nice and helpful things. Is this like your big time of year or whatever, or is there a time of year when the number of food drives is larger than other times of the year?
This would be the big time of year. I always tell our staff and volunteers from about the middle, well, like the second week of November, hang on, just until mid-January, just hang on. Because by about the middle of January, we've kind of dug out from some of that and kind of get back on track. But it is really busy this time of year. And, you know, we're grateful that people think of us and want to have food drives. It really adds a lot of variety to what we're able to offer.
Is there a time of year that maybe there's a lull, that maybe it would be super helpful to have more of that activity?
Summertime.
Okay.
I mean, thinking about like more chronically busy times of year, it does usually increase need usually, or demand usually goes up around this time of year. And then in the summertime, you know, when kids are home and maybe not in school receiving the school meals, that's another time and people are gone. So they don't think about maybe supporting the pantry in a way that they would at the holiday time.
Well, there's another issue where transportation can become a thing with the school meal programs, because the same students who qualify for free and reduced lunch can, of course, get food from that same program during the summer, but they might, since they're not going to school, they might not have a location near enough to them. So,
right.
Yeah, that can cause a real burden for families. I'm interested in knowing what kind of things that you need this time of year. When people are looking for you know, something to bring, I'm going to an event next weekend, and one of the suggestions was, in addition to the cost of your ticket, please bring an item for Wafer. And I'm thinking, what does Wafer need right now?
Really anything. You know, we, like I said, we do purchase a fair amount of food. The one thing that people don't often think about is personal care items. You know, toothpaste, toothbrush, shampoo, soap, toilet paper, razors, detergent, like any of that kind of stuff. You don't have enough money to buy food. You don't have enough money to buy those other things either. And oftentimes substitutions are used in their place, and that's not really very healthy either. So I would say anything. The areas that we run chronically low in, and I just ordered 3 pallets of soup yesterday, because we are running really low on soup, but we order a lot of soup, canned veggies, peanut butter, canned meat and personal care items are probably our top five needed items.
Okay. The personal care items is a good one to keep in mind, because I mean, when people hear food pantry, they don't necessarily think of running down the toothpaste aisle. But everybody needs to brush their teeth. Well, everybody should need to brush their teeth, right?
Right. And when you think, like, and this goes deeper, right, than just food, but you know, if somebody is really actively trying to change their life, you know, if they, you know, were out of a job and trying to find a job, or, you know, go to school, all of those things sort of culturally require us to come in a way that's presentable. And if you don't have, you know, clean clothes, or you haven't washed your hair or brushed your teeth, like, what kind of first impression are you making, and how likely is that to be successful? So I think that's like a different story for a different day, but, you know, it's nice to feel nice about yourself and be included in society. And by offering those items, we're able to help with that.
Is there anything that you don't need, or that you get too much of, or that might not be as useful as people think it is?
Sometimes we get things that are open and partially used.
Ooh.
So we can't use that. Otherwise, not really. I mean, pretty much everything that comes in here goes out the door. We're kind of in a strange time right now because we haven't fully opened back up after COVID.
Okay.
So we're doing outside registration and curbside grocery pickup. So people aren't coming in to choose items. So perhaps they're getting some things that maybe they don't know what to do with.
Okay. Well, I want to, before we hit our first break here, I want to give people an opportunity to learn how they can lend a hand. So if somebody's interested in either finding out how they can volunteer, or supporting your organization, or finding out how they can host a food drive, what's the best course of action for them to take?
Our website.
Okay.
All of that information is on our website. Of course, and our staff, myself, we're always willing to take phone calls, emails, answer questions. But there is a ton of information on our website.
And the website, one more time, is?
waferlacrosse.org.
All right. We're talking to Wafer's Executive Director, Aaron Waldhart, and here on Newsmakers today. And you can find their organization at waferlacrosse.org. And, of course, you can find all of our previous episodes, including this conversation, if you missed part of it, at WPR.org/newsmakers. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. You can also look for our show on your favorite podcast platform and find it there. Give us a thumbs up or a review, or whatever your platform allows. We'll continue our conversation in a moment with Aaron, and we'll talk about that that new facility they're putting together right in the heart of the North Side, and we'll do that next. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Wisconsin studio on the campus of UW La Crosse. We're talking with Aaron Waldhart, the executive director of Wafer Food Pantry, today on Newsmakers. And Aaron, as we were going to the break, I said we were going to talk about that new facility, and I wanted to do that right away because you took the old Gordy's grocery store. The people from long ago will remember it as a Scogan's IGA. For most of my childhood, it was anyway. And you are turning that thing. You're not just sprucing it up a bit. I mean, a complete transformation of that property. Talk about how you got involved in figuring out that was going to be the next move for Wafer.
Well, so as I talked about earlier, I've been here 10 years. And upon starting, the board let me know that they were looking for a new facility. So it took 10 years to find the right location. You know, the reason behind the move, I mean, there's many of them, but largely we've outgrown our space with every program that we have, which requires something a little bit different. So senior program, we have, low sugar, low sodium foods, or for a children's program, it might be pre-made meals or individual snacks. So, we like to store all that separately. And we just have run out of room. Our cooler and freezer space is hard to work within. Just in general, it's difficult for inventory rotation. It just takes a lot of time and manpower in order to do that. It's not efficient at all. And so really, we're out of space. But I think some of the other challenges that we face are we're in the lowest point of the city of La Crosse. So we have several flood events every year. Sometimes we can keep the water out, sometimes we can't. Again, inefficient use of time and resources. The building has served us well. We would like to provide service in a more dignified way for folks. Right now, if we were to have people coming in to receive food, they would be giving their personal information in a very small space with about 20 or 30 other people listening. And it's really difficult to talk about the things that maybe are going on in your life or other areas that you need help when everybody is listening. So just having a more thoughtful layout, shopping space that provides that dignified shopping experience.
Well, when I first heard that you were moving into the old IGA store, what street is that
George,
on? George Street.
George and Gillette.
George and Gillette on the north side. And when I first heard you were moving in there, I thought, oh, great, that'll be wonderful. Purchase the building. It'll be basically a turnkey thing. They can just move right in because it used to be a grocery store. It's now going to be a food pantry. Not what's happening. You are majorly renovating the thing. How much new space are you adding, and what's going into that space?
Yeah, so I think a lot of people kind of have the same reaction as you, like, oh, turnkey, that's great, but the building was in kind of poor repair. We're not a grocery store, so the space doesn't function for us like it should. That building was basically all store, no warehouse, no loading dock. The coolers and freezers were all very small, open air, very old. We saved two pieces of equipment from that building, a cooler and a freezer. Otherwise, the rest of it was gone.
Wow.
Just not worth the money that it would require to get it back into, good working shape. So what we're going to end up with is a building that is double what we have now. The addition off the north side of the building, is adding a lobby, for registration. It's adding our administrative offices, like a conference room that will be able to host other agencies if they want to come in and meet with people and talk about some different services in our community. We'll be adding a garage where we'll be able to pull two of our vehicles in. In the last year, we had the catalytic converter stolen off of our mobile pantry twice. So we'll be moving those in into the garage so we can avoid that vandalism. Adding a loading dock, because right now we don't have one either. And our street does not get plowed in the winter. So trying to operate a forklift in snow is dangerous and difficult. And then the other thing that we're going to be adding, which is super exciting, is one positive of COVID was that this outside registration and grocery pickup, people really like it. Yes, people like shopping for their own, but there is a segment of our population that really does appreciate that type of service. People, again, with mobility issues or moms with little kids, so she doesn't have to haul them in and do that whole thing. So really excited about that, too.
That sounds like a really good opportunity. And so you've been working on the building for, has it been a year? And
construction started in June.
Okay. So less than a year, but several months now. How long is it expected to take? When do you expect to be able to move in?
Well, spring.
That's not even a fair question, is it? Anybody who's ever taken on anything as small as even a minor home improvement project knows that's not a fair question.
Yes, I know. And people are so curious, and I appreciate that. It was originally supposed to be March 15th. We've run into a few snags, which, you know,
is the
day now that just happens. So, you know, hopefully we'll be up and running in June, maybe earlier. There's no firm timeline right now. I just know that we're behind schedule. And so spring is what we've landed on.
There's the building that you're occupying, the old grocery store there, is just a wonderful historic building too. I really enjoyed various people who dug up old pictures of it and everything. And you've got pictures on your website of some of the progress that's being made on the updates. And it's interesting to compare that old, it was just an old, like an 1800s corner grocery store. It had the two stories and just a wonderful old building. And it's good to see it being repaired and being added onto and put to good use again, rather than sitting in disrepair and empty. That's fantastic.
Yeah, we're really excited about the move. And, you know, the community's been really supportive of just the whole process. And we're just so appreciative of that. I think it's going to be, you know, it's intended to serve a purpose, but I think it's also going to bring back some of that history to the north side and really have a building that is going to be a source of pride for people, and also a place where when our patrons come can feel good about what the community has done for them.
Well, and you're moving into a space that really is associated with, you know, it's not a huge commercial area. It's very much a residential area, and it's near where a lot of people live, and that just adds a whole different feel to the operation.
Yeah, it does. You know, right now our current location, we are pretty much in a city industrial park. Our neighbors are all businesses. You know, people that you know live sort of in the area. There's not many, and so we're really going to be in the heart of a neighborhood, and we're excited for that.
So I want to in our last few minutes, I want to recap the sort of how can people help aspect of things. Tell me about there are a lot of people want to help, a lot of people want to bring some canned goods, things like that. What can people do that would be most helpful to Wafer?
Right now at the beginning of November we launched our capital campaign, and so I think at this point what would be most helpful is if our community would step up and contribute to the campaign to pay for that new facility and what it's going to do for the community. That's probably our single greatest need right now.
And is that information on the website as well?
It is. We just switched it over. So I think it says Capital Campaign tab or it's new facility, one of the two. We've just been working on that this week. But there's information on there. I update every couple weeks with some progress. We have biweekly meetings that kind of talk through some issues, and I post photos when I'm on site. So I would encourage people to follow along with that because it's fun. But, you know, the campaign really, really probably is our greatest work right now. And the sooner that we can get those funds raised, the quicker we can get back to other things.
And if people are interested in lending some elbow grease to Wafer, what kind of volunteer opportunities exist?
Do you mean just like in general,
like if they want to volunteer some hours helping out at the food pantry?
Sure. There's information about that on our website as well, or you can email our volunteer coordinator at volunteer@waferlacrosse.org. You know, we have 8 shifts during the week where we're open, receiving deliveries, serving people, sorting, stocking, packing, all of that good stuff. There's usually everybody can find something that in some way that they can contribute. And the volunteers really do have a lot of fun. It's kind of a family culture here. So you get to know the people that you work with if you come on the same day every week, and that's really neat to experience as well.
And you said you put your volunteers to work to the tune of about 1,000 hours a month, but that's not every single volunteer. If somebody volunteers,
no,
how many hours can they expect to give in like one shift or whatever? How long is that?
Well, again, it's based on what people are able to do. You know, we have had some people in the past where all they can do is come in for an hour. And I shouldn't say all they can do, but what they can offer is an hour. Or we have people that come in for our entire morning shift, which is, you know, between 8 and 9 until 1 o'clock. So most volunteers provide 4-ish hours at a time.
And that information is on your website as well, right?
Correct.
Which is?
waferlacrosse.org.
Okay. We're talking to Aaron Waldhart today on Newsmakers. Aaron is the executive director of Wafer Food Pantry. And I've been really excited to hear about this new facility, which is all wonderful. And earlier in our conversation, we talked a lot about what Wafer does and how they help the community, and then how the community in turn can help them. And if you missed part of our conversation today, you can find it all on our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. Aaron, I want to thank you very much for being on Newsmakers today. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you for having me. It was great to share what we do.
And if you'd like to get in touch with Newsmakers, you can always reach out to us. Our email is newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. But today is Wisconsin Public Radio's year-end member drive, and we're asking for your support. Member support is the largest source of funding for us here at WPR. We depend on it every single day. That's why your contribution in whatever amount is right for you really makes a difference. We have so many people to thank for making it possible for us to do your jobs. Thank you to our sustainers, to our members who renew by mail. Thank you to our business sponsors. We appreciate all of that support. It all adds up to make Newsmakers and the other shows that you hear here on WPR possible. And you can lend your voice to that support by going to WPR.org today. That's WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. In addition, you can choose the Food Bank Thank You Gift when you give $10 a month or $20 a month and support the programs you value, as well as providing hunger relief in your community. So support that by going to give $10 or $20 a month and ask for that Food Bank Thank You Gift when you become a sustainer at that level. If you're already a sustainer, thank you so much for what you do. Why don't you make this year the year that you increase the amount of that sustainer donation? If you're giving $10 a month, how about $15 or $20 a month? If you're at $20 a month already, could you possibly do $25 a month? Whatever amount that fits for you is exactly the right amount. But if you've been at that level for a few years, our costs are going up, and we'd ask you to consider maybe increasing your contribution as well. And we would greatly, greatly appreciate any gift in any amount. You rely on the programs that you hear on WPR every day. Programs like Newsmakers, programs like Morning Edition and All Things Considered on the NPR News and Music Network, programs like The Larry Miller Show and The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. So much value in all of these programs that you listen to on WPR. And of course, all the great content online at WPR.org. That's where you can find repeat episodes of Newsmakers, our entire catalog on there. Go pick a show from a few months ago or a year ago or even longer at WPR.org. While you're there, you can make a contribution as well, WPR.org, or you can call 888-202-2552. Your gift now is so important. As we end this year and look forward to 2023, make your gift today for the programs that you enjoy all year long by going to WPR.org, 888-202-2552. There are a number of opportunities to hear Newsmakers every week. We air at 10 o'clock on Friday mornings on the Ideas Network 90.3, and we air at 7 o'clock Friday evening on NPR News and Music 88.9. And of course, we're always online at wpr.org/newsmakers. Kate Spranger offers production assistance each week. I thank you, Kate. And I ask you to join us next time for another Newsmakers, right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.